Good evening and welcome to another episode of Inside the FLX. I'm Josh Durso, and as always, we are coming to you from the FingerLakes1.com studio in downtown Seneca Falls. Nationally, policing has taken center stage over the last 2 years as forces around the country try to evolve into a new era. Substance abuse, dissolution, shrinking budgets, and public perception, though, are just a few of the things challenging law enforcement locally. To talk about these issues and much more, Wayne County Sheriff Barry Virts is here to have a little chat with us. How are you today?
Good, Josh. Thanks for having me.
So just to get things started here, talk to us a little bit about how you got started in law enforcement and what shape your career has taken through the years.
Well, I actually got interested in law enforcement when I was probably about 8 years old. My dad was a judge in the town of Rose, held court in our house, in our foyer. And as a young boy, with the troopers and the deputies coming to the house all the time, it got my interest. And then my uncle worked at the sheriff's office. He actually retired as a lieutenant and ran the jail. And when I was a teenager and went to college at Erie Community North, got my degree, and got very lucky to be hired at the sheriff's office by Sheriff Bjork on my birthday in 1977. So it's been a dream come true for me.
So obviously you are the sheriff up in Wayne County. Talk to us about what some of the challenges are that you guys are sort of facing on a day-in, day-out basis.
Well, for, you know, the deputies and the corrections officers, obviously it's, you know, public safety is our main focus. For the corrections officers inside the jail, a lot of mental illness seen in the jail, a lot of drug issues where people are arrested. 90% of our inmates have substance abuse issues, whether it's alcohol, heroin, cocaine, or marijuana. On the police side, our deputies constantly worried about officer safety, domestic violence, drugs on the outside, our drugs investigation, heroin is a huge issue up in Wayne County, and all across the region, actually all across the country, heroin is really taking hold. And then again, you know, our crimes of larcenies, burglaries, and robberies are generally driven by drug-seeking people.
So you touched on a few things there that we're going to break into here, but specifically, the drug problem, the heroin epidemic, it's accelerated over the last several years. You've been in law enforcement for a long time. Talk to us about what it's been like from your perspective, really watching it go from, say, what it was 20 or 30 years ago to what it is present day.
Well, we're a very mobile society. Mm-hmm. You know, back when I was a kid, Rochester or Syracuse was, you know, pretty much the end of the world for everybody. And now we're just really so mobile, and with our mobile technology, you know, our smartphones, we can be connected to anyone. And also, you know, opiates. With the iStop, the prescription medication from doctors, people getting hooked on that. You know, really, you know, middle-aged people that, you know, started out with opiate prescriptions that were all legal, getting hooked on it. And then with iStop, you know, they couldn't doctor shop anymore. Mm-hmm. Then they went to the street level heroin. You can snort it, you know, you can shoot it up, or you can smoke it.
So that is one of the questions I think a lot of people wonder about is they think of drugs, and I think they might just sort of lean towards assuming it's mostly younger people or kids. It's not.
It's not people the scurvy of the earth or anything like that. You know, it's middle class people. Heroin is pretty much, you know, back in the 70s when I was a teenager, you know, a kid or getting started in law enforcement, it was always the picture of, you know, the junkie in the city, you know, sitting out with the needle. That's not it. You know, it's middle class Americans that are getting caught up in this opiate epidemic that we have.
So, in your estimation, where do you think the drugs are coming from, just in general? Do you think, is there a specific place, or is it just sort of they're coming from everywhere and it's...
Well, you know, for us, most of the traffic's coming out of Rochester and New York City. Mm-hmm. That makes its way from New York City, obviously from foreign countries, from Mexico, finds its way up into, you know, central New York, and then it's distributed. You know, most of the people that we arrest, even though we arrest them for sales, they're basically user sellers. They're selling enough to get enough for them to use to take care of that habit. And, you know, with heroin, the first high is the best high. Mm-hmm. They're always chasing that. But there's so many peripheral things that are bad about heroin. Not just the drug, but the people that you're hanging around with, the neighborhoods you're going to, the diseases, HIV and AIDS that you can get from it, hepatitis. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of things that are involved with that drug.
So you touched on another thing there a couple minutes ago, officer safety. What kind of measures do you guys have to take to kind of combat the risk that is with the more drugs being out on the street? There is a risk of, you know, if somebody gets into a scuffle with someone, they could potentially contract something somewhere along the way. Are there any extra safety measures that you guys have to take?
You know, both for our corrections officers and for the deputy sheriffs, you know, we have classes on bloodborne pathogens, how to deal with things and that aspect. But, you know, again, officer safety, always making sure that you got, you know, your gloves on, you know, your rubber gloves, latex gloves on when you're searching someone. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm always very worried, especially with the deputies sticking their hands in somebody's pocket, getting pricked by a needle.
Yeah.
You know, our corrections officers in the admission, our booking room admission when they search people. So we train to take precautions, to do pat downs. You know, ask the inmate or ask the suspect, you know, do you have anything you want to declare? Clear your pockets. Then we do the pat down and the search. But, you know, that's my biggest worry is bloodborne pathogens and also pricks from, you know, hypodermic needles.
Yeah. So what... As far as reaching kids, how do you go? What is your methodology for letting the kids? Sue Painstra last week was on the show, and he talked a lot about building relationships with young people. Are there any particular like things that you guys do to sort of instill that confidence between the two different parties there?
You know, one of the biggest projects I've taken on in my tenure as sheriff, and even through my entire career, is community outreach. Mm-hmm. You got to be out in the communities. They have to know that, you know, you are there to be spoken to reach out to give them advice. You know, we have a juvenile officer, Billy Benedict, that's very active in our schools. I have a full-time school resource officer in the North Rose Wilkett Central School District. And we're doing a pilot project right now with Palmac School District, where I have an officer, Terry Pickett, works there one day a week. So we're doing a pilot project there. But again, you know, it's just having a relationship with the community, having a relationship with families and the kids, making yourself approachable, making yourself available so somebody is comfortable to talk to you. Yep. Because a lot of times there's a lot of shame and there's a lot of, you know, stigma that goes with this. And sometimes they're afraid to reach out. So you just need to be very approachable, all law enforcement.
And that's one of the things. It seems as though most individuals in law enforcement feel very confidently about the whole resource officer program. In a perfect world, would that be something that's implemented in every school across the board?
That's actually one thing I'm addressing in my annual report. I'm doing a letter that'll be out next week, the annual report for our 2015 budget year. And my goal and vision is to put a school resource officer in every single one of the 11 school districts in Wayne County. It doesn't have to be a deputy sheriff. It could be someone from the police departments, but we need to have law enforcement presence in all our schools. The reason is, in Wayne County, about 15,000 children and staff members go to these 11 schools. 15,000. We have a population of about 93,000. These kids are our most vulnerable population, and these sites need to be safe and secure.
What are some of the, I would guess the next question would be, what are some of the common issues you see with kids outside of just the outlying trust? Are there certain crimes, certain issues you see with them, or issues at home? Are they, is it, what is sort of happening?
Well, you know, there's a lot of social issues, you know, kids, a lot of anxiety out there, conflict resolution. You know, we have several programs at the sheriff's office, a whole menu that I send out to the school superintendents every year, bullying, social media training for children. You know, back when I was a kid, if you had a picture and you showed a bunch of buddies a picture, you know, the picture went back in your pocket, they only had an image of it. You know, now a kid, they put something out in social media, that digital image is out there forever, and it can be very damaged to them, you know, as life goes on. So, again, just, you know, to be very cognitive and aware of what you do today in this digital mobile world will affect you for the rest of your life.
And I thought it was really interesting. We were talking a little bit before the before we came on the air, and I thought you had a really interesting perspective on how young people are treated in the legal system, 16, 17-year-olds, if you want to elaborate on that
a little bit. Yeah, you know, I get in a lot of trouble with my colleagues and my peers and even, you know, some of the upstate legislators, but I truly believe in the 16 and 17-year-old raise the age. And when I say that, I believe in the science and the philosophy of raise the age. None of us. None of us are the same person that we were when we were 16 and 17 years old. Mm-hmm. We have more knowledge. We have more maturity. We have more experience. Mm-hmm. So I agree with, you know, especially nonviolent. Okay, we're talking about, you know, the kid's petty larceny, the trespass, yep. the criminal mischief, mm-hmm. silly stuff, mm-hmm. stupid stuff that is criminal behavior. But kids shouldn't be punished for that. Now, we have a hybrid system here in New York with youthful offender. You know, you can get a million youthful offenders for a misdemeanor. You get one for a felony. Mm-hmm. But again, I believe in the science and in the philosophy of raise the age for 16 and 17-year-olds. Mm-hmm. I don't quite trust the procedure that the state's going to put forward. And I certainly don't trust the funding because they say they'll pay for it 100%. But as we know, the state starts out with good intention to fund these programs, and then it all gets put back on the local taxpayer, you know, at the town and the county level.
So, okay, that's a perfect segue right into my next question. What sort of challenges do you guys see on a day-to-day operational basis as far as funding goes? Because funding, sometimes it goes up, more times than not, though, it goes down. So what do you guys have to do to sort of fight the tidal wave, so to speak?
Well, from my chair as sheriff, the toughest thing for me to do is to merge the business piece of it. That's the mm-hmm. budget with the operations piece of it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have literally wrung that sheriff's office budget as tight as I can get it.
Yep.
You know, every year I go through every single line, mm-hmm. you know, to reduce costs. I'm at that. You know, we're down to personnel now. I've had to shift personnel. We've reduced our jail staff by 8 full-time corrections officers mm-hmm. Because our count went down. Mm-hmm. So, again, constantly looking at where the need is, where the resources need to go. And, you know, I'm a pretty frugal guy with taxpayers' money. I'm pretty generous with my own money, but with taxpayers' mm-hmm. money, I'm pretty frugal. Had a conversation with our, you know, food vendor. He goes, mm-hmm. well, it's only a penny, you know, per meal more. Well, that penny turns out to be like $1,250, and now you take $1,250 there and another $500 here, $600 there. It adds up to be a chunk of money. So constantly on the business side, very transparent mm-hmm. with the business operations, the resolutions, and how we do our business, but I'm very tight-lipped of what we do in our criminal investigations.
So to that funding end, recently in today's, you released your column today, monthly report, mm-hmm. The Marine Patrol funding reduction that is taking place. Everyone should care about this from what I read out of your column. Explain to our viewers what this is and what the reduction means to what you guys do.
Every single individual in the Finger Lakes area and around the greater Rochester and greater Syracuse area, upstate New York, should care about this. People can say, I don't own a boat, I don't live on the water, I don't go to the water, but you should care. Mm-hmm. Because the Finger Lakes, our water, our navigation, is a big economic engine mm-hmm. in our area. So people that boat, people that go to our state parks and things like that, they want to be safe and secure. In 2010, my first year as sheriff, I get a letter in about April mm-hmm. that, you know, the funding for the Marine Patrol that we were supposed to get back at a 75% reimbursement was going to be cut to 50%. That was about a $26,000 loss in revenue that I was planning on mm-hmm. for the 2010 year. And then about 3 weeks later, I get another letter to say, oh, by the way, the reduction in reimbursement is going to be 50% from here on going forward. Well, that was a $52,000 stopgap that I had to make up for.
Yeah.
So we had to make some adjustments in the budget. But again, our waterways, our fishermen, you know, the people that enjoy the waterways and stuff like that, it is very, very important. Sheriff's offices are generally the ones. I think 41 sheriff's offices out of the 57 in New York State provide a Marine Patrol service. Mm-hmm. That funding needs to go back to 75% because the state has abandoned that type of law enforcement to provide that type of patrol and safety to our citizens. Mm-hmm. That's been put on the back of sheriff's offices. We need to be reimbursed for that funding at 75%.
So, all right, so another issue that you guys deal with every single day is DWI. How are the efforts going in Wayne County to reduce DWI?
Well, I got appointed the Stop DWI coordinator back in 2013. We have a wonderful relationship with the Finger Lakes Council on Alcoholism. Mm-hmm. We actually brought them in and have a contract with them that they help us with our community outreach and public education. Mm-hmm. We have victims impact panels where if somebody gets arrested for DWI, they have to go to a victims impact panel. We have 4 of those a year. That's where we bring victims in that mm-hmm. have been affected by DWI. The ones we use in Wayne County, both of them lost children.
Mm-hmm.
That really sparked my first victims impact panel that I went to in 2013 before I became the coordinator. I sat there and I was so moved, so mm-hmm. impressed that I said, this is a training that I need to put out to law enforcement and to the deputies.
Mm-hmm.
Because at an accident scene, we see the crumpled up metal, we see the people that are hurt, the fatalities, they're put into the ambulance, away they go, we're there smelling the radiator and the oil on the road.
Mm-hmm.
But we get done with the accident, we're done with it.
Yeah.
And we move on. Families and victims and people that have lost loved ones, mm-hmm. that pain never leaves them. So what I did, we had with the Council on Alcoholism, we actually did a victims impact panel for just law enforcement officers. Mm-hmm. I had these families that had lost children come in and talk to the deputies, and it was very, very moving to the deputies. That tells them, it shows them that, look, you stop a car, and if somebody was intoxicated, they're about drugs, and the guy or the girl, they're looking for a break, and it might be borderline, you let them go. They might kill somebody. We're most vulnerable. In our motor vehicles.
Yeah.
We are most vulnerable in our motor vehicles, every single one of us, to a fatality. That outside our homes, that's where we're most vulnerable.
So piggybacking off of the whole policing and what your efforts are like in Wayne County, two communities, one community has already gone through dissolution, another one is mulling, potentially going through dissolution. How does that impact how you guys do your job?
Well, Lyons went through dissolution. It was about a three-year process. From the beginning, I said, look, that's a decision that the Village of Lyons residents have to make. That's not a decision that the sheriff, I, should interject myself into.
Yep.
But all through the entire process and all the meetings that I went to and where I was asked to speak or testify in the meetings, My message was always consistent, and it still is to this day.
Mm-hmm.
The Village of Lyons, if they dissolved, the town had the opportunity to make a town police department. If the mm-hmm. town of Lyons decided to make a town police department, the sheriff's office would work with that town police department seamlessly, just like we did the village police department.
Mm-hmm.
Or the town could decide to pay for dedicated services with the sheriff's office to provide 24-hour coverage, 16-hour coverage, whatever they decided they wanted to have,
mm-hmm.
and we would come up with a contract and a contract with payment to the county and the sheriff's office,
mm-hmm.
and I would provide those patrols through deputies. Under that process, I would be obligated to hire the Lyons police officers that lost their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Or if the town decided to do nothing, between the state police and the sheriff's office, we'd have to decide how we're going to make up for this stopgap, because the calls are going to still start coming in.
Mm-hmm.
The town decided that they didn't want to fund a police department. I ended up putting on 8 more deputies. The Board of Supervisors approved that. Now, here's the thing that I want to clarify. Those 8 deputies aren't just for the town of Lyons or the dissolved portion of Lyons.
Mm-hmm.
Because the state police barracks actually sits in what was the Village of Lyons.
Mm-hmm.
The state police could get the majority of those calls in the Village of Lyons. But with the state police present in that community, that would leave voids on the perimeter of the county.
Yeah.
And other places in the county. And my worry was response time.
Mm-hmm.
Not only response time for victims, but response times for officer safety matters where officers needed backups, whether it was deputies, mm-hmm. village or town patrolmen, or the state police. So that was my concern. I put the pencil to the paper, we crunched a bunch of numbers, and realized that I would need 8 more people.
So talk to us a little bit about, this is a bigger, more national issue, but the public perception of police officers. Stu Painstra had some really great insights last week. Give us your take on what the whole perception gap or issue is when it comes to police officers.
Well, I get most of my news off my Twitter account.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I try to stay convenient or connected with the news of what's going on. But when I watch the news, it's not like most people that watch the news. When I watch the news, it's like, okay, sheriff's office, we can handle that. Yep, we're ready for that. Yep, we've got a plan for that. Yep, the emergency response team could handle that. Yep, the Marine Patrol could handle that. Deputies could handle that situation. Whoa, never saw that one coming. Got to do some training on that. So
yeah.
I watch the news as an educational thing
mm-hmm.
to say what we're prepared for and what we aren't prepared for.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when Ferguson went down, I studied that, read everything I could read about it, read every news clip on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I became body cameras.
Yeah.
We need to get body cameras. So I put a plan together with the help of Senator Nozzolio. I got a legislative grant to pay for some of it. I had the money to pay for the cameras.
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't realize was the $35,000 or $40,000 to pay for the cameras was easy. How are you going to store it? How are you going to maintain it?
Yep.
Who's going to look at all those files? When it gets foiled, who's going to put the fuzzy picture on the person's face mm-hmm. that shouldn't be released? That turned in from a $35,000 to $40,000 project to like a $130,000 to $200,000 project.
Yeah.
So I decided to back away from that until we could get some technology or till it kind of gets, you know, a little more easy to do. Because we have a take-home mm-hmm. car program in Wayne County.
Yep.
We did some test runs to hardwire, you know, do the data transmission
mm-hmm.
was about 45 minutes to an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we did it mobily, it was like way over an hour.
Yeah.
Plus the cost of the data.
Yep.
So I parked that project until that gets down. But it's all about community outreach.
Mm-hmm.
You can't sit in your office. I can't sit in my office. I can't expect my deputies to sit in a car, to drive around, to just answer the calls, to give people tickets, and expect the community is going to respect us
mm-hmm.
and is going to understand us. I need to get out of the office to get to meetings, get out to community festivals so people can talk to me. They need to understand that my philosophy is that we're going to be accountable for our actions, good or bad,
mm-hmm.
that we're going to show dignity and respect to everyone, even mm-hmm. the people that we arrest. People understand that when they see you, they talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
They see it in your eyes. They see it in your voice. They see how you act. They see how you expect your deputies to act, how you act around your deputies, how your deputies act around situations. So it's constant training. It's constant reinforcement to the deputies that what we do is important. Our job matters. Our job is to solve problems and to help people.
So since you took over in 2009, what are some of your proudest accomplishments within the office?
Well, I can't say they're just my proudest accomplishments because I have 192 employees at the sheriff's office.
Yes.
And it's not a me sheriff's office, as Sheriff Barry Wirtz.
Mm-hmm.
It's a we sheriff's office. And I have a great command staff, great group of deputies, great group of corrections officers, court security officers, and clerical staff that keep this thing going.
Mm-hmm.
As a group, as a law enforcement agency, as a sheriff's office, I think being the fifth sheriff's office in the state to be fully accredited in all our operations, the jail facility, road patrol, civil office, and court security. That's very important for our professionalism and our standards and our policies.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is my ability to reach out to the local police departments. We weren't involved with Wayne Net, which is the county's drug task force.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't help the police departments in their community festivals. You know, with the help of Chief David Chrysler out of NORC PD, him and I, we were able to get the police departments together, and now we work as a solidified team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're our own law enforcement agencies. Yeah, we all wear different uniforms, but we all work together. So that collaboration of getting all law enforcement with the state police and the local police all working together in Wayne County is good. I now have two full-time sergeant investigator and a deputy
mm-hmm.
that are assigned to the Wayne Net full-time. Actually, that sergeant supervises that whole activity
mm-hmm.
Of WayneNet. That used to be housed at a location that they had to pay rent for. We now house that in the sheriff's office.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing. National training that I've bought. I'm on the Domestic Violence Committee of the National Sheriff's Association. I brought three trainings back to the county, offered that to all the Finger Lakes area law enforcement. You know, a couple of those trainings would have been $10,000 each if we had to pay for those.
Oh, yeah.
I brought those to the county for nothing.
Yeah.
So that's a good accomplishment. With Dr. Surrett of the NORC Wayne Hospital Emergency Room, we've started a tactical medical team
mm-hmm.
that they actually have about eight, EMS folks
mm-hmm.
that train with our emergency response team. So when our emergency response team gets called to be deployed, this tactical medical team will go with them
mm-hmm.
to be their medical people. So if one of my deputies get hurt, I've got tactical people that are medics right on scene. That's a huge accomplishment.
It is really
that
awesome.
We've done.
So what are some of the, if you have any events or anything like that coming up that your office is sponsoring, is there anything that people in Wayne County should be keeping an eye out for over the next few months?
Yeah, we'll start our boater safety classes. They'll start up. We do a collaboration with the Pelmac School District. We host them at the Sheriff's Office and other places around the county. That'll be on our website. I'll do Facebook postings for mm-hmm. that. Right now, because it's cold out, the community festivals will start in May with Williamson Apple Blossom being the first one, mm-hmm. and then we'll have several throughout the year. The Wayne County Fair in August is always a big highlight that we have. Mm-hmm. We do child seat safety programs that we'll have throughout the year, and I'll post those on the Facebook page. We don't have any right now scheduled, but I'll have those on the website and the Facebook page.
And what is that Facebook page? Is
Wayne County Sheriff's Office.
Okay.
And it's Wayne County Sheriff's Office, New York, not Wayne County, Detroit. A lot of people get that mixed up.
So the last question before I get you out of here. I asked Stu Peenstra this last week. I'm going to ask you the same thing. For young people who want to pursue a career in law enforcement, make the case. They see a lot of negative stuff out there. Make the case why law enforcement is the way to go.
I got involved in law enforcement, as I said, my dad was a judge, and I saw how my dad treated people mm-hmm. and how fair he was with people and how he took time with people, not only in the courtroom that was in our house, but in the community when people would come up and talk to him. Mm-hmm. And my uncle was a great mentor and just a wonderful individual in my life that, it's not about you're going to be a forensic investigator. You're going to find that piece of hair that's sitting on the counter to solve the crime. It's about being a problem solver, going out there and helping people. Yeah, you do have to arrest people. I've been around since 1977. There's people I've arrested. Those same people have been witnesses for me. Those same people have come to me and said, hey, look, I'm having trouble with my son or my daughter. Can you give me some advice? So to be fair, firm, and consistent, mm-hmm. to show dignity and respect to people, it has been a dream come true to me, not just because I'm sheriff, but law enforcement in general has been a dream come true to me. It's a great team atmosphere where you work with individuals, but you really have to be a lot of integrity and have a lot of ethics, because everybody that I hire and everybody I work with, just because I'm sheriff, this patch on my shoulder, 192 people are represented by that patch.
Yep.
If one of us screw up or do something we shouldn't do, all of us are affected by that. So again, it's a great career. I would suggest that if you like people and you like solving problems, good field to get into.
All right. So I really appreciate you coming on today. I'm sure we'll be having you on again here in the next few months down the road.
Thank you very much.
All right, well, that's going to do it for us today. I'd like to thank our viewers as well as Sheriff Virts for joining us and remind everyone that next week, Scott Levine of the Seneca County Addictions Program will be here to talk about some of their efforts to reduce drug abuse in Seneca County. As always, remember to check out FingerLakes1.com for the latest news and updates from around the area. For Wayne County Sheriff Barry Virts, I'm Josh Durso, inviting you to join us next week on another episode of Inside the FLX.